Coming up on KUCB News, Unalaskans can now participate in substance abuse treatment from home, and Alaska senators criticize the president's meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics. Located in the airport cargo building, Redfish sells computers, Androids, iPhones, iPads, televisions, headphones, and unlocked phones. Business hours can be obtained by calling 359-2205.
Redfish, we got stuff.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Zoe Sobel with some local news on Tuesday, July 17th, 2018. Unalaska and Sandpoint residents will soon have the option of receiving substance abuse treatment from home. People from the Aleutian Islands have always had to leave the region for recovery, but starting August 1st, they'll have another choice.
The idea is that folks can stay in the community, gain or maintain employment, and learn the skills of recovery right where they would be using them.
Dr. Carrie Boyd is a behavioral health coordinator for the new intensive outpatient program.
The name of the program is Awakateen, and it translates to working together. And really what that means is this is hard work. Recovery is hard work.
Created by the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association and Eastern Aleutian Tribes, Boyd says Awakateen will provide a choice between full-time residential treatment and regular outpatient therapy, which might happen once a week.
You know, sometimes it's a short period of time where someone has a moment of clarity or a moment where they really are just ready. And now they have something that they can turn to, which they didn't before.
Boyd says the 12-week program will connect participants in Unalaska and Sandpoint for group sessions via telephone and video conferencing. They'll come together for 9 hours each week in addition to working with individual counselors. The program will also supplement therapy with cultural and community activities. That's according to Awakateen's other coordinator, Sherry Johansson.
That could look like attending culture camp or being involved in a subsistence activity, which is also considered a source of income, maybe finding a mentor in the community, or being involved in tribal activities.
While the program is currently limited to Unalaska and Sandpoint residents, organizers say they'll evaluate it after an 18-month pilot period and consider expanding around the region. Supported by grant funding, Awakateen is tapping existing local providers to keep expenses low and the program sustainable. Unalaska and Sandpoint residents interested in joining the program should contact their local clinic. Participants can apply for sliding insurance rate through their tribal nonprofits or Medicaid, as well as pay with private insurance. Federal managers recently agreed to a special early opening of the fur seal harvest on a Bering Sea island. The decision came after a request by the tribal government on St. George. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Nat Hurst reports tribal leaders said they needed the meat because the island store was running out of food.
Imagine you live on a remote island in the middle of the ocean. The weather's bad, flights have been canceled, and the store is starting to run out of fresh food. This is not the plot of a post-apocalyptic movie. It's real life on St. George Island in the Pribilofs. Pat Pletnikoff is the mayor.
I don't know how many times I've called Ace to say, hey, where are our groceries?
Ace is a cargo carrier that flies to St. George.
Why can't we get them? Why is it that we're not getting any freight service to St. George, and why aren't your airplanes flying out here?
Pletnikoff says about 60 people live on St. George. It's way out in the middle of the Bering Sea, more than 200 miles from the mainland. Passenger planes only come twice a week, and flights can be canceled by bad weather, which can make it hard for residents to keep fresh food around. One thing that's not in short supply on the island is meat. St. George and nearby St. Paul both host massive populations of fur seals in the summer and fall. Between them, about 500,000. But their harvest is strictly regulated by the Federal Fur Seal Act. When the St. George store was starting to run short on food recently, the island's tribal government presented the National Marine Fisheries Service with a request: open the subsistence seal harvest before the scheduled start date of June 23rd. The service responded by issuing a special temporary rule allowing the harvest to start 3 days early. Mike Williams works for the Fisheries Service.
The community needed food, and this was the way that the government could help with that.
Williams says typically no more than 150 seals are taken in a year. Each one has about 30 pounds of edible meat. Those numbers are way down from when the seals were hunted commercially for their fur. That's how St. George and St. Paul were originally settled 2 centuries ago. Russians forcibly moved Alaska natives from the Aleutian Islands to help with the harvest. Even after the U.S. bought Alaska from Russia, the government continued relying on Pribilof residents to hunt and process fur seals. But the hunt ended in the 1980s, and Pletnikov, St. George's mayor, says his island hasn't received enough government support to transition to a more diverse economy. Pletnikov says that without better, federally subsidized air service, St. George will continue to face problems like the food shortage that led to the early seal harvest.
This early start on fur sealing, while a good gesture on the part of the United States government and the tribe, doesn't begin to address the serious issues that we need to deal with and we need to get a handle on.
St. George faces continuing uncertainty about its flight schedule amid the bankruptcy of Penn Air, the passenger airline that serves the island. Residents are also trying to improve their boat harbor to allow better access for barges. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Nat Herz in Anchorage.
The U.S. House Wednesday passed a renewal of the Magnuson-Stevens Act sponsored by Alaska Congressman Don Young. The original 1976 Magnuson-Stevens is almost universally praised. It's the law that keeps foreign fishing fleets off America's shores and established regional management councils to rebuild fish stocks and ensure sustainable harvests. But as Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports, Young's renewal of the law is not without controversy.
Young always says the Magnuson-Stevens Act was misnamed.
I'd like to take pride in that bill as my bill, the Magnuson Act. And it went over to the Senate did what they usually do. They named it the Magnuson-Stevens Act, and it shouldn't have been named that. I won't go into what it should have been named, but it was written in the House.
Rightly or wrongly, the bill is named for the late Senators Warren Magnuson of Washington and Ted Stevens of Alaska. But Young's point is, he considers the law his baby and insists he would never do anything to undercut it. Young says his latest bill, H.R. 200, builds on the original idea that fisheries management should be based on sound science.
That same goal is there, but times evolved, technology improved, and we think it's time that the councils that are doing their jobs have a little more flexibility.
Adding flexibility to the law is important, Young says, because the management councils know the facts of their fisheries better than Congress does. For instance, in the House floor debate, Young pointed to the law's 10-year deadline for stock rebuilding programs.
If the fish come back quicker under this Bill 200, they can be fished at a sustainable yield level. Under the present law, which I wrote, they can't do that. Otherwise, we lose years and management of the fish for a period of time.
Young says some people oppose his bill because they don't want commercial fisheries to succeed. It's the flexibility Young likes that is exactly what strikes some as a step backwards. Democratic Congressman Jared Huffman of California says Young's revisions would open the door to the bad old days of overfishing before Young and the senators created the Magnuson-Stevens Act. Huffman led the opposition to Young's modifications.
So I find myself ironically in the position of defending the framework that he essentially created against my colleagues' attempts to make changes that I believe are fundamentally threatening to that very framework.
Huffman cited a government estimate that if all the nation's depleted fisheries were rebuilt, it would create an additional $31 billion in seafood sales.
So that's why we want to keep these critical provisions that have worked so well, because we can do even better if we stay the course. With that, I reserve the balance of my time.
Linda Bankin of Sitka caught part of the House debate online during a break in her fishing season. She is director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association and says it's more important than ever to rely on science in fisheries management.
As the oceans change right now with warming oceans, ocean acidification,
we can't assume that fish have the resilience that we had thought they had in the past. We need to be particularly cautious.
Bankin says the push for more flexibility is primarily coming from the recreational fishing sector in the Gulf of Mexico, which is seeking alternative management methods. She's not in favor of straying from the principles in the Magnuson-Stevens Act.
A fish that's dead is a fish that's dead, no matter who caught it. So all sectors need to be held to annual catch limits if we are to ensure a healthy future for our fisheries.
The chairman of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, whose jurisdiction includes the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska, wrote a letter saying the council doesn't see the need for major changes to the Magnuson-Stevens Act, but also sees the benefit of giving the councils more flexibility in some situations. The bill passed the House easily and next goes to the Senate, where its prospects are far from certain. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Both of Alaska's Republican U.S. senators are taking issue with President Trump's remarks yesterday in Helsinki. Trump, standing beside Russian President Vladimir Putin, wouldn't say whether he believes the U.S. intelligence agency's assessment that Russia meddled in the 2016 election.
I have great confidence in my intelligence people, but I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today.
Senator Lisa Murkowski, in a written statement, said she was stunned Trump didn't take the opportunity at the press conference to confront Putin. She says Trump instead validated the Russian leader by giving credence to his denial of involvement. In his own written statement, Senator Dan Sullivan said he disagrees with President Trump's remarks in Helsinki. Sullivan says the U.S. intelligence community is obviously more credible than Putin, whom Sullivan called a mafia regime leader. In a tweet on Sunday before the Helsinki summit, Trump put the blame for the poor U.S.-Russia relationship on what he called U.S. stupidity and the ongoing investigation into the 2016 election. Special Counsel Robert Mueller is investigating whether Russia interfered with the election and whether any Americans helped. Sullivan, though, said it's up to Russia to improve the relationship.
Don't invade your neighbors and move out of the countries that you've invaded. Don't align yourself with the world's biggest sponsor, state terrorism, in terms of Iran. Don't back regimes like Bashar al-Assad. And certainly don't meddle in the elections of democracies like the United States.
So what you're saying is you...
Sullivan spoke Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Zoe Sobel. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. Please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecast.